This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Tony Pua, the political secretary to the Minister of Finance, YB Lim Guan Eng, is with us on the grill this morning. Now let's dive straight into it, Tony.
Sure.
This dilemma of keeping or selling it, why did it arise in the first place? Why were people considering the North-South Highway? Why was the government considering the sale of the North-South Highway in the first place?
Well, you are assuming that government is considering the sale of the North-South Highway. I think the ultimate objective of any proposals for the North-South Highway is to see how we can deliver lower tolls. That's essentially the bottom line. It could be via a sale, it could be via a restructuring, and I think the government decided on the right measure, which is to restructure the toll such that we are able to deliver lower toll, at the same time save the government money that we can use for other development or welfare programs for the rakyat.
Just a little bit of a backward-looking question as well. Why were the bids directed towards the Works Ministry, headed by Barubian, as opposed to yourselves at the MOF or even Kazana or EPF, the other two, owners?
The right parties to actually submit the bids should be Kazana, because they are the Kazana and EPF. They are the owners of the highways. But I suppose some of these bidders wanted to have the government press down on Kazana and EPF in order to get their way. Hence, the proposals were submitted to the government directly.
And the direct linkages. But just as well then, that the government decided to keep Plus Expressways in this ownership, which is obviously the right thing to do. You have promised reductions in tolls by 18%, no hikes till 2058, but you've also extended the concession.
That's right.
Let's talk about the reductions in toll fares first. Okay. Have they been affected yet?
Yes, they have been affected since 1st of February, so riders are actually enjoying the benefit of the discounts now. It's not just the North-South Expressway. It covers the Penang Bridge, it covers Butterworth Kulim Expressway, Seremban, Port Dickson Highway, the LPT2, the East Coast, one of the East Coast Expressways, and the second link to Singapore.
Okay, so explain the maths for us, right? Because obviously this comes at a cost. You've extended your concession by 2058, by 20 years. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you want to also reduce tolls by 18%. So how's that going to work?
That helps by extending by 20 years. So you actually defray some of the costs that you have to meet today. But the real difference that comes about from this deal are actually threefold. One fold is actually the extension by 20 years. So that helps in mitigating the expense. Number two, it is because once under the new restructured scheme, the government will actually provide guarantees for the balance of the loans. That reduces interest costs. So while it's self-financing, it actually reduces the cost of interest, and hence the interest cost can actually be transferred to the users themselves. And number three, given that it's no longer going to be a profit-making entity, there's no longer a profit margin involved in the highways, and this profit margin is then transferred into the discounts for the users out there.
But that also means Malaysians will be paying toll for another 20 years on top of that concession period.
That is the portion where you can say whether the glass is half full or glass is half empty. What we believe is by extending this over 20 years, more people will share the burden, because not everyone will be paying up to 2058, whether we like it or not. I'm not sure whether I'll be around in 2058 to pay the toll. And number two, even if you calculate the total toll paid, regardless of who is paying it, over that period, present value it, it's still less than what is being paid up to 2038.
Nevertheless, in the present scenario, you've got 30.6 billion ringgit in outstanding bonds to existing bondholders. 30 billion, okay. Call it 30 billion, right? What is the proposition to bondholders to accept the revised terms of agreement?
I think for many of these bondholders, they are quite happy to accept a government-guaranteed bond. So that's usually by market rates. So there are market rates for government guaranteed bonds, there are market rates for AAA bonds, and there are market rates for other types of bonds. So they are generally quite happy to accept a longer tenure bond, government guaranteed, that gives them secured returns over that period.
Presumably, you've had some discussions with them already. What have been some points that have been raised?
I think the discussions with them will be carried out by Kazana and EPF respectively, and they will make the necessary announcements. So I won't pre-jump that. But the bankers have been involved, and the bankers are fairly optimistic everything will be relatively smooth.
So, to the extent you can, what kind of visibility can you offer to the discussion that have been taking place. What are some of the pushbacks from bondholders?
So far none. So far, not that I'm aware of any pushback from bondholders. Generally, it's a case of formal discussions awaiting to take place, and we expect the restructuring to complete within a period of about 6 months.
Okay, so still very much in the transport vein, Tony. The government announced plans to take over Gamuda's four highways, mm-hmm. including the Smart Highway, I think,
LDP,
the LDP as well,
Sprint
Kasas, yeah?
That's right.
6.2 billion ringgit, I think. Yep. So what's the update on that particular issue?
Well, officially, the transaction has been approved by the cabinet, but it's still subjected to a few points which are being dealt with at this point in time. Number one, the agreement that's being looked into by both the AG's office as well as lawyers of the concessionaires. Number two, the cabinet has pointed out that they would like to fine-tune some parts of the agreement, so we are awaiting a decision from that.
So what's the timelines then? And in fact, what is the funding plan for 6.2 billion ringgit?
Actually, the beauty about both of these highway plans is the government doesn't have to fork out any money. So essentially, take Gamuda, for example. It's a 6.2 billion acquisition, but it's funded entirely by bonds. Which means what? Which means that these bonds will be repaid via the toll or congestion charge collection over the period of the concession. And for Gamuda tolls, there's no extension to the concessions. So the tolls itself are enough to pay off the acquisition cost. So there's no burden on the government at all. We have received criticisms that, this 6.2 billion is better spent somewhere else. But if we don't buy these tolls, there's no 6.2 billion to spend somewhere else. Because this 6.2 billion will be paid for by the lowered or discounted tolls that will be collecting going forward.
But what does this do for the country's debt profile? We've been talking about debt parity for some time.
There are two types of debts. Three types. One is direct debt, which is our debt. Then there are guarantees. And guarantees, we have made it very clear to distinguish two types of guarantees. The guarantees that we include in our debt profile, which the previous government didn't do, is the guarantees where we know we have to pay at some point in time going forward. So for MRT, committed. Because we know that the MRT fares are never, ever going to be able to pay off the MRT. So we have to pay for that. For LRT, it's the same. But for highways where the funds, the collections are clearly able to repay the loan on itself, they are uncommitted guarantees. These are like when we give guarantees to Tenaga, we know that Tenaga can pay for its own debt.
Is this something that Moody's and S&P's and even Fitch would be willing to stomach?
Absolutely, because this has been, in fact, the rating agencies has been extremely happy that we were very transparent with regards to government guarantees to date. In the past, it is a bit of a black hole. No one's really sure what type of cash flow profiles do we have to these guarantees. Now we actually distinguish them. We show them one by one, which are the ones that we will have to bear, which are the ones that we don't have to bear. And they're very happy with the degree of transparency that we have demonstrated to them today.
Well, this also means that people will have to continue paying tolls at those four highways, which runs a little counter to the Pakatan election manifesto.
It does. What we want to do is that at this point in time, while we are not able to fully take over these tolls, the manifesto clearly states that we should try to reduce them gradually over time. And this is the first step towards doing that.
So what kind of visibility can you offer in terms of reduction of tolls, especially for the LDP, which is a little bit hard to stomach because the traffic can get quite horrendous.
That's right.
And people still have to pay, which is a bit of a double
whammy. Which is the first step that we want to do. We take the easiest mechanism where we've created a self-funding mechanism and created lower tolls for the people.
I'm talking this morning to Tony Pua, the political secretary to the Minister of Finance, YB Lim Guaneng. After this, we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of other highway and transport-related projects as well as the economy. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Tony Pua, the political secretary to the Minister of Finance, YB Lim Guaneng, is with us on the grill this morning. Now, we left it last, Tony, at the Gamuda highways, where the government is taking over its four highways, 6.2 billion ringgit. I'm just wondering, what's the connection to that of that particular transaction to the Penang Transport Master Plan, where Gamuda is itself the controlling shareholder of SRS Consortium at 60%? And their mammoth 46 billion ringgit transport master plan there.
I think there has been a fair bit of insinuations in the market that this is a sweetheart deal for Gamuda and that that it is to be used to fund the project in Penang, and that some connection between the Ministry of Finance and Gamuda. I find that somewhat laughable because, number one, what we have done for the highway deal is essentially to reduce their future profits from the toll concessions. They could make a lot more money or steady money over time for the rest of the concession without having to sell to the government. So it's not about raising funds. Number two, if people still remember, we did a number on them for the MRT2 project where we are able to reduce the cost of the MRT by 8.8 billion ringgit. That's 8.8 billion ringgit of lower profits for Gamuda and MMC. So for our position, it's actually very clear. We look at it on a case-by-case basis on what is the best in the best interest of the rakyat.
Well, that being said, 8.8 billion is a fraction of the 46 billion ringgit transport master plan. So is it a case of, you know, giving one up for in favour of the other?
Number one, MRT2 is a federal government project. Number two, PTMP, Penang Transport Master Plan, is a Penang government project. The overall estimated project value of PTMP, I'm not even very sure, but I do know that it is in phases, in stages over decades. It's not a 3-year project, it's not a 5-year project, it's a project over decades. And the exact value of these projects, whether it's the LRT or the highways involved, have not even been finalised.
In terms of how it's structured, we noticed quite laudably, I guess, that the government has converted or removed the project delivery partner model for MRT2, LRT3, even the Panmorning Highway to save costs. But
that's
for
right.
The Transport Master Plan, that PDP model remains with Gamuda as the 60% owner.
I think this, number one, I'm not in the best position to comment on the PTMP model because it is a Penang state government contract. So they have a choice as to the model they choose to undertake, but they are free to evaluate what the federal government has done to save costs and see how they can adjust their models accordingly.
Yeah, but you remain, well, I think at one point in time, you were the investment liaison officer for the Chief Minister of Penang based in the Klang Valley. So I guess you would know a little bit about the Transport Master Plan. Why do you think the Penang state government departed from the HELCRO plan, which envisaged the 40% public transport ridership to something which now has 3 man-made islands, an LRT, and 4 highways?
Okay. Again, my position in the past didn't involve me in the affairs of the state government. I was just helping the chief minister meet investors in Kuala Lumpur. So that doesn't make me part of the Penang state government. But at the same time, I do know that the HELCRO master plan did have an LRT system. And the LRT system will cost billions. And the billions need to be funded from somewhere. And one of the best ways to do it, on the assumption that the environment is protected, on the assumption that the social welfare of the people are protected, then land reclamation is one of the options for fundraising in order to fund the Penang Transport Master Plan.
But from the viewpoint of national growth and the economic stimulus, I guess, a 46 billion ringgit project, a project of the size would be good for the country, by and large, generally speaking, in terms of the multiplier effect. Do you agree that this is one of the considerations in that perspective?
I think it is a consideration for the Penang state government. The Penang state government is looking at how to grow Penang beyond its current limitations. Penang is short of land, and Penang is getting increasingly congested. So this is one of the measures that I believe kills two birds with one stone by increasing the availability of land for development that doesn't encroach into the existing congested areas in Penang. And number two, to build a world-class infrastructure for Penang Island and as well as the Penang mainland for the better quality of life for Penangites.
Well, the fear is that all this is in the future, and the fear is that there's going to be another Forest City in the north versus the Forest City in the south, which obviously has seen its own issues in terms of overdevelopment. Do you have a viewpoint on that?
My viewpoint on that is that whoever who undertakes the project, the private sector that will be building or developing the islands, they will have to take the commercial decision as to what to build, where to build, how to build, and how dense to build. There's no point throwing big sums of private money into the islands and not have demand and becomes a ghost town. So I'm pretty sure that the Malaysian developers would know what would be marketable and what will work for Penang.
Well, one of the hallmarks of the Pakatan government has been the transparency, and of course media freedoms is something that is to be lauded as well, Tony.
Some are complaining too much freedom today.
Maybe that's a double-edged sword. But the activist Kul Salman Nasution has expressed and alleged that the Penang government has not been transparent about the Transmo master plan from the get-go. She said that the display of the 20-volume proposal was severely restricted. Visitors can't make copies, bring in cameras or even handphones. No cost breakdown of any component of the TMP has also been made, including the reclamation, which is intriguing for a project of this size.
I must say that one or two points that has been raised by the activists, I have empathy for. But to say that the Penang State Government has not been transparent, I find that completely off. Number one, I think the Penang Transport Master Plan has been publicly displayed many times over the islands. There have been many, many dialogues with herself, with the activists, with the residents concerned, with various parties. And the accusation that the cause has not been, publicly displayed, I can only assume, and that I know for a fact, is the cause hasn't been finalised. The cost has not been finalised. If the cost hasn't been finalised, how to display what the price is? So at this stage in time, the design of the stations, the design of the LRT, the system to be used, to be implemented, what type of LRT, hasn't even been decided. So how is the state government able to show this to the people? So they have to first decide it on what they want to implement, how much it will cost, then they can show these contracts and the design to the people out there.
Yeah, the people of Penang, Tony, have been staunch supporters of DAP for a long time, but there's a sense among society that their concerns about this project have been ignored, and they've been their protestations have been set aside in favour of development over traffic alleviation. Is that concern justified?
I think the concern should be there. But I think it needs to be balanced against sustainable development. Now, there are many things we can do with Penang. And I'm not the best person to speak about it because I am not from Penang. I'm not part of Penang State Government. So the questions actually shouldn't be asked on me. But my response is there has to be development, but it has to be sustainable development. So the civil society is right to ensure the sustainable element. The government is right to ensure that there must be development.
So talking about concerns, what is the biggest concern on your mind, in yours and Lim Guan Eng's mind at this point in time?
At this point in time, I think the biggest concern for us really is how to stimulate the economy. I think we have been a little bit, in Hokkien they say soya, since we took over Putrajaya. We came in and Trump decided to have a trade war with China. That has affected global growth, and we will ultimately get affected because we are a trading nation. If you have read the statements the minister made towards the end of last year, early this year, we were extremely optimistic about the economic growth prospects for this year. Unfortunately, that has been all shot to smithereens because of the Wuhan virus crisis. So the immediate thing on our minds now is how to bring back growth in the fastest possible manner, how to make ourselves resilient in the short term and prepare for a recovery towards the second half of the year. So basically on 27 February, the Prime Minister will be issuing or reading out the budget stimulus plan for 2019.
So
the 2020.
Of course, Guan Eng has said this is not a budget, nor is it a kind of a manifesto, but it's something in the interim. To the extent that you can, what kind of measures can people expect?
I think the first one, without revealing too much details because they are not finalised yet, I think the focus area, and the minister have said this enough times, is really to help the sectors of the industry that has been most affected by the virus crisis, and that would be travel and tourism. That would be travel and tourism, your hotels, your travel-related activities, your tourism. You can imagine all the travel operators having invested heavily in the final quarter of last year to prepare for Visit Malaysia year this year. And yet, once the year comes, everything is shuttered. So they have been affected badly, and the first priority would be for us to help the travel and tours industry. And beyond that, one of the things we want to at the same time look at is to protect our consumption. If you look at our GDP, consumption is our strongest
driver of
the economy. And part of it has to do with travel and tourism as well. So with travel and tourism being taken out from the consumption equation, then we have to look at ways to boost consumption in order to maintain our GDP growth.
So taking the viewpoint of the sector, the business sector first, what kind of measures can they expect in 10 days' time?
I think we have many tools at our hands. Number one, outright grants. Number two, subsidies. Number three, interest rates. Number four, tax, all the tax tools that we can use to assist. So all measures are being considered, and we will make sure the right measures get implemented for the stimulus.
To what extent do you think the UK Serious Fraud Office's investigations into AirAsia and its alleged infringements have scuppered your plans on basically the travel sector? I mean, does it come discipline?
No, I think it is an
because
issue.
Because the other part, of course, is of course the Malaysia Airlines troubles and the alleged, well, the considered merger with AirAsia as well. So that, again, must have entered the equation.
No, I think those are separate issues from the travel and tours industry. AirAsia continues to fly. There's corporate governance issues that the directors have to deal with and clarify. But AirAsia planes continue to fly. The issue of whether they are passengers or not, it's due to the Wuhan crisis rather than due to anything else that's out there.
Okay, and in terms of the measures to the people, because private consumption, right, domestic consumption is also being affected, what kind of measures can people expect?
As highlighted previously, consumption is a very important segment of the economy that we are trying to maintain and boost. So we will consider all measures. We will look at measures that have worked in the past. We will look at new measures that can better deliver consumptions. I can't go into specifics at the moment.
Just give taster. 10 days time. Come on. Let's just take it as an exclusive.
I'm not a minister, so let's not get myself into trouble here.
I'm talking this morning to Tony Pua. He's the political secretary to the Minister of Finance, YB Lim Guan Eng. We're going to come back after this and we're going to be talking politics and the economy. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Tony Pua, the political secretary to the Minister of Finance, Lim Guan Eng, is with us on the grill this morning. Now, last we left it, the government is considering plans, Tony, to help the rakyat get over this latest road bump in its economy. In the past, we know that the government has cut EPF contribution rates. We know that also there's been some kind of incentives for BRIM. There's also been the 30 ringgits for the touch and go card. And of course, there's also been My Salam. Are these kinds of the measures also being considered by the government at this point?
I think all measures are being considered. The budget team is hard at work evaluating these measures, the quantum, the size, the feasibility, the speed at which the people will feel the benefits of the measures. They're all being considered, and the Prime Minister will announce the details on 27th of February.
So how bad is the situation really? Because China is the growth engine of the world and China is ailing right now. 1/6 of the population is under lockdown. Fitch, of course, has downgraded Malaysia's GDP to 3.7%, down 80 basis points from 4.5 previously. We've seen Bank Negara be preemptive in terms of cutting rates. How bad is it?
I think the situation is not dire, but it is sufficiently serious for us to be extremely concerned about the growth going forward, and hence the necessity and the urgency of the stimulus measures we want to put in place. Fitch have cut our growth rates, but that's in line with the cut in growth rates for all other countries that are affected in this region. We are not the only ones suffering from this. We can only hope that the situation is contained and we begin to see the recovery from the crisis starting the middle of this year. So we are doing the best we can. We cannot predict when the crisis will end, unfortunately. But we do see that it is likely to end by the middle of this year, and we will want to take advantage of the recovery going forward.
What is the possibility of the government recasting its forecast growth range? Because in the past, I think it was in the high fours, which is obviously not tenable at this point in time. Will you consider cutting, and when?
I think that's something that the Ministry of Finance will decide in due time.
Okay, so all this is happening at a time when there's obviously political fissures in the coalition, right? Not pretty. We've got statutory declarations, allegedly, of the Prime Minister. Should he stay? Should he go? There's, of course, power struggles, as we know. What kind of messages do you think the coalition should be sending instead of these political fissures?
I think two parts to that. Number one, obviously, the coalition should be sending a message of unity in the times of difficulty. The coalition should be acting together in the interest of the people. There's no question about that. But at the same time, I think the media is in a frenzy over purported conspiracies, purported allegations that if you trace back to the original stories, quoting sources. So I to some extent, the landscape today, the media landscape today, maybe out of no choice, they are forced to focus on speculative issues because speculative issues sell. Whereas selling facts about, say, My Salam, selling facts about some government policies, yeah, they'll print it today. They won't print it again tomorrow.
Well, unfortunately, media tends to speculate in the absence of information.
More so today than before.
So, are you saying, hand on heart, that there was no statutory declaration?
I'm not aware of any statutory declaration. It has never come to me to sign a statutory declaration. And the question is, if there is 136 so-called SDs to form a new government, why wait 2 weeks' time before forming it? Why not just go straight to Yang di-Pertuan Agong and form the new government?
And yet, Lim Guan Eng issued an official statement discussing Pakatan Nasional and the dangers of a Pakatan Nasional without a DAP inside the government.
So the question is there an attempt to form an alternative? Probably. Is there already 136 SDs as speculated and that the change of government is imminent? No. Now, I mean, if I were the parties trying to form this alternative government, I already got 136. Quickly run with the SDs to the Agong and form the new government. Why wait for some of them to be changed to change their minds and say that they didn't sign it or they signed another SD to counter the SD they signed? Why do that? Once you have it, run to the palace and form the new government, right? So why give little secret sources stories to newspapers to create that hype? No, it doesn't work that way.
Well, Tony, don't you see how unsettling this must be to
Absolutely.
Investors? There's a reason why the KLCI is in the doldrums. There's a reason why the ringgit is in the doldrums. There is no story. There is no story for Malaysia at this point in time. And Malaysia Inc. is a strategy that the Prime Minister is proposing, which is dating to the 80s. Where is the imagination behind that?
I think Malaysia Inc. today is very different from Malaysia Inc. In the 80s. One of the things that if you read all the analysts and rating reports out there about Malaysia, they are happy with the policies that we are putting in place. Are we not getting sufficient publicity on it? Yes. Are we getting overshadowed by some of the political speculations around? Yes, but that doesn't stop us from doing the right things for the economy. And we believe that over the longer term, the policies for the economy, once they take effect, once we ride out the storm of the trade wars as well as the Wuhan crisis, we will be able to show the effect on our economy.
Well, Tony, time is running out and you are the publicity secretary
Absolutely.
For the second biggest party in the coalition. The coalition itself is quite fragile at this point in time. Do you think you should be getting together and being more united at this point rather than putting all this speculation in the news?
I think you answered your own question. Absolutely, we need to demonstrate unity. We need to focus. But unfortunately, there are those who see themselves losing out in the political process, protecting their own selfish interests and trying to jeopardize the coalition at the moment. That we have to deal with.
Well, the coalition has passed the 2-year mark in terms of being a new government.
That's right.
Time is running out. What are you concerned within the party that you might not make it past the first term?
I think there's 3 years. We believe that we have put in a lot of good measures, especially in the economy, which will see the effects of it in the coming years. So we are positive on the economy. On politics, we know that many of the problems that are arising today as a result of the transition, the Prime Minister have stated unequivocally that he will retire after APEC. We know that Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim will become the next Prime Minister, and we hope that once that is resolved, that uncertainty will then go away and the relevant parties involved will fall in line as part of the rank and file.
Do you think Anwar is the right man to lead the country, Tony?
He is the right man to lead the country.
Okay, so obviously you must be very, very busy with your job in terms of managing the economy. One question on your constituency. A listener has written in saying that Kepong is under your remit, but there's
the Selangor side of Kepong.
That's right. There's been very little improvement in roads and traffic, basically there's not much has been done. Have you been too busy with the federal matters over your constituency?
I think it's I would say that's not quite a fair question to ask me. I am an MP and I work in the Ministry of Finance. I think the roads in Kepong could be better. And that's the role that we have to look at, whether it is state routes under the local councils or it is the federal routes that the Ministry of Works will have to look into.
Okay,
but if you do have complaints, feel free to write to me, tonypoi@yahoo.com. I will make sure the issues get addressed.
Okay, Tony, as always, thank you for your time and your presence here, which thank is much you. To be said in the new government and transparency. I was talking to Tony Poi, the political secretary to the Minister of Finance, YB Lim Guan Eng, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.